making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Be afraid. Be very, very afraid. Your microwave is watching you. this is one of those moments where you go, it's almost mockable, but it's scary because you've got Kellyanne Conway, who is a senior White House advisor. She's the person who's got the president's ear. So this has got to be something that has muttered out of the president's mouth. Evidently, according to Kellyanne Conway, she was interviewed yesterday by New Jersey's The Record newspaper, and she said that the government has many ways. They've got many ways to surveil. She said, quote, there are many ways to surveil each other. You can surveil someone through their phones, certainly through their television sets, any number of ways, including your microwave. Your microwave is watching you. And look, there are a number of ways for the NSA and for the federal government to spy on us. Absolutely. But continually pushing, your microwave's watching you, and continually pushing this stuff, to me, only is to make us, well, really distrustful of our government. And that's scary, scary stuff. Here to talk a little bit about this, give us our weekly dose of sanity. I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come talk with us. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So your microwave is watching you.
I'm so glad you started there, because I was just reading an article about, actually it was a moment on Twitter, and just sort of reading all of the tweets about her saying that we can be surveilled through our microwaves and our televisions. And so I'm just, it's great that you started there, because just, oh my gosh, right? I mean, I agree that she's in Trump's ear, and also he's in her ear, and it's sort of scary to think that both of them are sort of believing the same delusions, and neither one of them, you know, has the capacity to say maybe this isn't something we should go out and actually say to the American people. But unfortunately, this is what they're doing, and I do think that the goal is to be crazy making, in particular, with his supporters, to spread this paranoia and this idea that there's a deep state, quote unquote, and that you can't trust your neighbors, you can't trust the media, you can't trust the government, you can't trust anyone, and so, you know, let's just allow the worst of fascism to take hold, because we have to do this to protect ourselves.
Yeah, I mean,
so
it's scary.
I do think that they're creating that.
No, and they're creating it. Look, and Hollywood does it too. And I got to wonder how much of this paranoia comes from Hollywood. Because, look, we do live in an era where anyone can hack into your stuff. In fact, I think there was a movie not too long ago where basically someone hacked into someone's smart house and basically controlled everything they saw and did. It was kind of scary. But, you know, that's Hollywood. I get that. Coming out of the White House, a senior advisor saying your microwave can watch you, that's scary stuff.
Yeah. And I think that the thing that makes it the most scary is that, again, it is a bait and switch, because what they're projecting, the paranoia that Trump feels internally, that he should actually feel. I mean, he should be paranoid that, you know, that his phones are being tapped and that the intelligence community knows that he's been in contact with Russia in ways that are treasonous and that actually are not consistent with what we would want our president to do, or our president-elect, or someone who's, you know, a candidate running for president. And so he rightfully so is paranoid, right? But the, you know, in his paranoia, he is deflecting the responsibility away from himself and the things that he's done onto people to say that there's a conspiracy, there's a plot against him, that he doesn't deserve this, he's just a victim. circumstances and of this vast liberal conspiracy. And so that's meant to obfuscate. It's meant to get people riled up in this idea that they can't trust our institutions, instead of looking at him and going, we can't actually trust him.
Right.
You know, he's
right.
The one that's doing all of these things.
Well, to be honest, when I heard this, that the microwaves are watching us, and, you know, you think about, look, I know you can listen through the smartphones, and there are the TV things. There's some questions there. But to have one, to have the president say it and have it on his mind, starts making me think of when he does finally have his snap, does he start using this against us? I mean, is he now finding out this stuff is existing and is now going, mm-hmm. Hey, I can use this.
And, you know, I think that there are reports coming out that he is using it, even within his own administration, that he's actually, that, you know, when these leaks started to happen, that internally they started to actually surveil their own people.
Yep.
So it's something that yes, I think, will be sort of propagated in terms of policy, and certainly we already have the Patriot Act that arose from 9/11 and the paranoia and the, you know, the justified fear of terrorism and attacks being used as a way to kind of capitalize on people's fear and actually push through policies that become more of an attack on our civil liberties. But aside from that, I do think that what he's going to do within his administration to clamp down on leaks or to clamp down on whistleblowers will sort of be the first exhibition of that authoritarian power.
Yes.
Because, you know, they need to present as united a front as they can, and they've already gotten off to such a bad start on that front, you know.
Yeah, if they start boiling their own people in oil, what are they going to do to protesters and people who are, look, I mean, understand what they do to their own. It's what they do to, will want to eventually do to the rest of us. Because, look, as you see more protests, as you see more people getting involved and into the streets, we're seeing states across the country going, hey, how do we hold this stuff in check, and how do we make the penalties just so draconian,
right,
that people walk away?
Right, right, right. And I think, you know, when we talk about the paranoia that is happening societally, it actually can work in two ways. I mean, you know, for the people who are sort of reality based, it can galvanize us as well. And, you know, we have a choice to say, okay, yes, you know, as they're clamping down harder, we're going to fight back even harder. But then obviously there's going to be some attrition, right? Because not everyone can, you know, take time off of their job and be out in the streets or risk being arrested. Or obviously if it becomes an issue where they're actually brutalizing people in the streets, you know, not everybody's going to want to actually put their body and their life on the line for this. But I also think that the fact that there is a persistent resistance movement and there is all of this suspicion and distrust of his administration, I do think that because that is happening inside of his mind, the volume is turned up so high on his own paranoia because he sees that people are pushing back, and he sees that, yes, even though he's trying to put forth this image that he's a competent leader, that still, you know, his approval rating isn't what he wants it to be. And he can sort of make up whatever fantasies that you know, he's had so many supporters and rallies and this, that, and the other, but still the facts on the paper or that he's not a popular president, and that, you know, even the judiciary is fighting him tooth and nail. So, you know, sort of leading into my most recent piece that came out yesterday on Daily Coast, I call it the telltale tweet. And I compare what's going on inside of Trump's mind to Edgar Allan Poe's, you know, very famous short story, And the narrator there is convinced that, you know, this old man is, like, stalking him with this eye and, you know, the quote-unquote microwaves the eye in your television. And that this individual is scheming against him, and it drives him mad to where he kills this guy, and, you know, dismembers his body, puts it under the floorboards. But then, you know, he's creating a stir and drawing attention to the fact that he's committed this murder, and he's trying to convince everyone that, you know, that he's sane. And that, you know, there really was this vulture eye, there really was this old man that was out to get him, and that he had to do what he did. And so he brings the investigators into his home, you know, right on top of where the body sits. But then the noise, you know, the beating of that telltale heart drives him so mad that he actually just confesses and tells them to rip up the floorboards to reveal the body. And so Trump, in a lot of ways, with his tweets, with all of these, you know, suspicious, you know, kind of just delusions that they're passing around, they're bringing more attention to the fact that they've actually done something, and it's summoning the authorities to look for a body. And that's kind of what's happening right now.
Interesting. I mean, it's an interesting thought. I mean, I don't ever see Trump getting to the point where he would confess on himself knowingly, but you're probably right. I mean, you look at the tweets, you look at maybe there's a justification.
Yeah, he feels that he's being watched because he is being watched. I mean, you know, we know that he was being surveilled by, what, 17 intelligence agencies. Hillary Clinton said it over and over again during the debate. And so I do think that you know, people are around him are probably trying to inform him that yes, you know, we are being surveilled. This is how Flynn went down. This is how Jeff Sessions is now in the hot seat, you know, and trying to explain to him that, no, this is really a serious crisis situation, you know, but rather than deal with it in that place, you know, he's now turning it into, you know, this deep state vast conspiracy that, again, is obviously being buttressed by the right-wing media, you know, Breitbart, Bannon, Fox News, and all of these outlets that are just, you know, swimming in this sea of delusion, but it's all guilty delusion.
Right. But here's the thing. I mean, this plays into, you know, all of the tinfoil hat, all of the mm-hmm. radical right wing thoughts. So this is selling newspapers. This is selling ad space on your crazy websites and your far out, you know, midnight talk show host.
Yeah. And I mean, did you know the National Enquirer? You know, there are certainly, you know, again, like you talked about last time, we think about this as a fringe, but the fact that it remains and is so insidious, and there is this undercurrent of people who just sort of believe things that are not rooted in evidence, and either aren't interested or even capable of seeking out factual information and using this, you know, like critical thinking skills. And so it's not so much that, that this is new. I mean, certainly people have, you know, there's people who still think that the moon landing was fake. And various, aspects of that. But I do think that when a cultural identity, when a way of life and a belief system and a political ideology is predicated on this belief system of, you know, we are victims, we are being oppressed by people of color, we are being oppressed by immigrants, we are being oppressed by various government agencies. You know, that ideology, it needs a constant good versus evil battle to be playing out in order for it to continue and to thrive in our politics, you know?
So, no, you need the black and white thought process. And look,
exactly.
I don't know if that's a, you know, I've read articles and talked to people who think that's the difference between conservatives and liberals. Liberals live in kind of a gray area where things are, you know, you take facts into consideration, whereas conservatives mm-hmm. are very black and white. It's either absolutely right or absolutely wrong, and there's no in between.
Mm-hmm. 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 Well, you know, I think, again, a lot of that is you know, again, we think about it philosophically, but it actually is connected to geography. And so, you know, we can call it black and white thinking or we can call it gray. But if you live in a more diverse urban community, you do see more gray, right? You see different, you know, people. You see people from all different walks of life. You see different circumstances. You're more likely to see non-traditional households. You're more likely to see people who work in different industries. And so there is a lot of gray just in that reality. But when you live in a rural community, you know, where you're sort of, you know, hours away from the nearest metropolitan area and everybody is, you know, very homogenous and everybody sort of looks the same, believes the same, votes the same. You know, it may or may not be that they're, you know, willfully choosing to believe that there's nothing outside of that. But at least for what's in front of them, that's what is their reality, is that there is a black and white and there is a very sharp line in terms of what they see and how those messages are transmitted to them through their televisions and radios.
That's a good point. You know, and you know, as you were talking about it, I'm thinking about the representative from Iowa, Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, came out
terrible.
This, and has taken some
terrible.
An interesting position, if you know, to say the least, that, you know, that we're not going to, what exactly did they say? You're not going to replace.
I don't know. Something about other people's babies.
Yeah, it was some bizarre statement like that. But again, but, you know, he's playing to the base. I mean, Iowa is, as you've said, you know, one of the most homogenous states in the country, very much a white state. And that kind of rhetoric, I believe, would play in Iowa.
Oh, absolutely. And it certainly did. I mean, you know, again, when we look at the swing states, or, you know, I don't even know if you can call a lot of these places swing states anymore in terms of just how their demographics have changed. But yes, and Iowa, you know, that's also no coincidence. I mean, when you think about the primaries and you think about the way our political process is organized in America, everything starts in Iowa and New Hampshire, right? I mean, everything starts in places that are 90%+ white and that aren't very heterogeneous in terms of their demographics and life circumstance. And so months and months and months are spent on, you know, the views of the people that live there. What are they looking for in a representative? What are they looking for in terms of policy? And what they're looking for is somebody like Steve King, who, you know, and this is not the first time that he's made overtly racist comments. You know, I mean, he was talking about immigrant, you know, people, you know, Mexicans coming over the border and something about their calves are the size of cantaloupe. You know, that was a couple of years ago. You know, and so, you know, but this is something that they, you know, presumably know about him and are cheering him on and continue to send him back to D.C. To just be a plague on our discourse and our government.
And that's it, a plague on our discourse.
And you know, and there are people in districts all across America, you know, hey, I'm here in Texas, right? I mean, and this is what sells, and this is what people vote for, even if they themselves aren't, you know, going around wearing a white hood or, you know, proudly identifying as a person who's a racist or a bigot. But behind the scenes, they are most certainly voting for people who say things like this, not holding them accountable for saying those things, and also supporting policies that are the institutionalization of those bigotries.
Yeah. So last question I have for you then on this, because, you know, you look at this kind of messaging and, you know, I look at, you know, the statement, you know, someone told me about Steve Bannon. Well, Steve Bannon's not really a racist. It's just, you know, he does it because that's what people want. He's a businessman providing a service. And I've actually believed that's much worse. So do you think what's coming out of the White House is, do they really believe this stuff? Or is it that this is how we use the tinfoil folks and grow that segment of people to be defenders, and use them kind of as the useful idiots, or do they really believe it?
Yeah, I guess my answer would be, does it matter? I mean, if the outcome ultimately is the propagation of Jim Crow and apartheid, then does it matter if they genuinely feel it in their hearts or not? I mean, if they're a businessman and they're seeing this as a way to make money, the outcome is still racism, and it's still oppression, and it's still misogyny, and it's still xenophobia, and it's still homophobia. I mean, it's still all of these things that are morally apprehensive. And at the same time, these are people who are claiming to be Christian and claiming to be evangelicals, and it's totally hypocritical to even their own stated values. So I think that's sort of a mental gymnastics or a cognitive dissonance that people are doing there in trying to go, oh, it's just business, to maybe sort of absolve that person of the ugliest base impulses of racism. But if you peddle in racism, you're okay with it. And if you're benefiting from it, if, you know, that's blood money. And so it's bad either way. And I think that, you know, nobody should get a free pass, whether it's, you know, the person that goes and votes for this or, you know, Bannon or Trump, who are at the top trickling it down.
Yeah. See, cause I actually think it's worse if you can have some disagreements with people who actually believe this to their core. I kind of, on some level, I can almost respect that a little bit, that you're willing to take the consequences for what you claim to believe. But if you
and just be honest,
I mean, but if you don't believe it and you're simply using it for one gain or another, I actually think that's much worse.
And I think it's much worse, and I don't even understand it. I don't even understand if that's not something that in your soul you firmly believe, how you can do that. And you know, if that's the case, then yes, money is the root of all evil. And it's a sickness. But again, I think for the people in marginalized communities, you know, it doesn't matter one hill of beans, if the person believes it or not, the outcome is still that they're, oppressed.
Good point.
And that the policy is still in place. And that nothing is changing, because people are sort of, you know, finding ways to wiggle out of it. And so ultimately, I think that the more that we can tie the actual outcomes, you know, what actually happens, whatever your stated intentions are, here are the outcomes of voter suppression. Here are the outcomes of, you know, shutting down Planned Parenthood. Here are the, you know, you have all of these outbreaks that are happening. You know, in Indiana and Louisiana, and, you know, when these governors get rid of family planning and contraception services, and there's all these STD breakouts, well, ultimately, what was your stated goal?
I think more people with STDs and thinning the herd. I truly believe that that's the point. It's that moral superiority, but it is what it is. Anyway, I appreciate the time. I can't wait for next week. But I appreciate your thoughts.
All right. Keep up the fight and have a great week.
You too. Propane Jane, great stuff. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Me and my people are through. Me and my people are ready. Me and my people are just about due. Better start counting. We're coming out swinging.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.